The Hawaii Sports Radio Network on 95.1 FM and AM 760 presents Wake Up in the Den with Kubule Ogbayani.
Good morning, beautiful people. It's Wake Up in the Den. I'm Kubule Ogbayani alongside Paul Brecht. Happy Wednesday. Happy Manawahine Wednesday, that is. Thank you guys for joining us today. Hope everyone is awake and ready to rock and roll. I am surprisingly more than awake than I thought I'd be today.
Hey now.
After spending majority of the day out in the sun yesterday at the Ed Wong Memorial Golf Tournament to support the Nakoa Football Club. Very, very fun day. Mahalo to everyone for coming out and that support the Hawaii football program through either the golf tournament or by any ways and means necessary. I did not golf, though. A lot of people were surprised, but that's because I had to, you know, cut the day short to come over here and bring you guys some Hawaii boys volleyball action last night. Shout out to Paul Brecht and Michael Escaro for challenging themselves a little bit to call volleyball for the first time. I must say, you guys, not too shabby. You'll be able to listen to it later today.
It was definitely a challenge, that's for sure. Shout out to Arches Mihara and just anyone who does call volleyball. Very fast-moving sport. And it's one that I'm still learning about here. I had full transparency. When I moved out here to Hawaii, volleyball wasn't necessarily something that was in my repertoire. Just as a fan, just to watch,
yeah.
I remember the first time I went to a high school volleyball match with you, Ku, as a member of HSRN, and I was shocked by how many fans were in attendance, because back in upstate New York where I'm from, I mean, it's exciting, it can be fun at times, but nothing like that. And then obviously our Rainbow Warriors and what goes on there, both for the Rainbow Wahine and Warriors, I should say, is incredible, but it just continued my crash course in the sport of volleyball, and it was extremely, extremely fun. A five-setter, of course, we got treated to, so it's partially for reps what we're doing, and, Kalani and Roosevelt just wanted to oblige and give us as many reps as humanly possible in our first match calling boys volleyball together.
Yeah, so like I said, you guys will be able to hear that later today. I think it's recording worthy. We can throw it up there for the beautiful people to listen to. You guys didn't crash and burn. It sounded fine. That, like, you know, your favorite word, fine. But
I will give a shout out to our Michael Lascaro for kind of helping buoy me along, especially in the beginning as I was trying to find my rhythm, just because he does know quite a bit more about volleyball and just kind of the flow of it than I do. And he did a nice job last night, I thought, explaining a lot of the things that were going on that I might have missed in the exact moment, which is exactly what a color commentator is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's continuing his growth as a reporter, commentator, photographer, everything with us here at HSRN.
Anything and everything that you can think of.
Because we're 5-tool players.
Exactly. And at this point, I feel like we're 10-tool players. We're going to create our own kind of position there. What we are over here. As I joked with Michael last night, I was like, yeah, we hired you just to put up tents. You didn't know that? Because that's his favorite thing to do. If you know. Anywho, like I said, it is Manawahine Wednesday, and we got a real treat for you. Another water polo player that I had a chance to chat with, Lot Sturtevant. Originally from the Netherlands, she is one of the utility players for the highly successful University of Hawaii women's water polo team, finishing up the regular season this weekend. And she is one of four seniors that will be celebrated on Saturday following their match. So you'll get to hear my chat in just a little bit in the next segment with Lot for Manawahine Wednesday. Also coming up on the show, probably talk a little bit of basketball, but more so that the NBA season is finally going to start heading into the most exciting part of the entire season. That is the NBA playoffs, because the regular season wraps up this weekend. It was crazy. Like, setting our play-by-play schedule, I'm like, oh, Sunday's the last regular season game for the LA Clippers already. That went by really, really fast. So playoffs begin. We'll kind of get you a little preview of that coming up this weekend. Well, tomorrow starts the Masters through Sunday. And then this weekend, I know we haven't really talked about it all that much. Probably save it for tomorrow because there's a lot to get into today. But Max Holloway returns to action this Saturday, taking on Justin Gaethje for the BMF title fight. If you guys don't know what title that is, you can look it up because I can't say it on air. But take that how you must. Or I guess I could say the baddest MF. So.
I mean, that's what I'd be saying all the time, so whatever. It makes sense.
Can't say it on air, but you guys get the gist. Like I said, Google it if you want to know exactly what it is. So Justin Gaethje, Max Holloway, we'll talk about a little later in the week. But looking over at the Masters again, getting started tomorrow morning, Hawaii time. Looking at your favorites, there's Scottie Scheffler at 4-1, kind of like the favorite that's way up there, followed by Rory McIlroy at 11-1, John Rahm, the defending Masters champion, at 12-1, Xander Schauffele at 14-1, Hideki Matsuyama 18-1, where Hideki is only a few years off from winning. And you heard our Chaz Ontai say that Tiger Woods looking to prove the doubters wrong again. I mean, we're not too far removed from the last time he won in 2019, but if you look at what the odds makers say via BetMGM, 125-1 for Tiger Woods to win, which, hey, we've seen crazier things happen, like in that 2019. So it's one of those, like, if you just want to have a good time and you just put a little sprinkle on the 125-1, then you're just going to cheer for Tiger Woods. But Scottie Scheffler, at least according to the odds, is the way ahead favorite to win the Masters 2024.
I miss golfing a little bit. I still got to get my clubs out here. I'm a lefty. That's the hard thing. So because
well, most courses have at least one set of left like clubs that you can rent.
Oh, see, but I don't like renting. Golf is a feel type of thing. You need to feel good with your clubs. Yeah. Either way, I
rock hand-me-down clubs anyway, so I don't really know.
I remember that 2019 Masters, and I remember watching it because I was still in college, and I was at a like recruitment day for my college or whatever. It was an accepted students day, and we had the Masters on in the back watching it, and while we're talking to these prospective students, we're like celebrating big shots together. Thankfully, obviously, I was a sports media major. I was trying to bring in more sports media majors. So part of it being like, oh, I mean, look at what we're doing at Accepted Students Day. But that is my memory of that last real big Tiger Woods win. And I'll probably never forget that just for that reason where I was like, oh, I was supposed to be in a professional environment and the people running it were less professional than me.
And it's crazy, right, to think back to that time, not thinking that Tiger Woods would come back for that horrific car crash and be able to just win a Masters, like the greatest in the world. This is before LIV Golf, so you still had essentially everyone vying for that green jacket before the pandemic. So this was in 2019 when he won. And margin of victory, only won by a stroke to take everyone back to that. And he beat Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and Xander Schauffele. So close one. I'm trying to really recall. I think I was just so, it was almost like a Twilight Zone kind of moment, I think, that I almost don't even remember. Like, I don't have a specific memory like you do, just because I'm like, did Tiger Woods really win? I'm still like, the memory of them putting the green jacket on him all these years later is like, well, because before that, the last time he won was 2005. And then, as we know, he went through all of the things that he went through. And then 2019 is when he wins again. And apparently, he's going to try to win it one more time. We don't know when he'll stop competing, but the golf world needs Tiger Woods. He's like, he brings that much more eyeballs, like kind of like when we talk about Caitlin Clark, which we'll get to that a little later in the show. There's certain athletes that are the sports or their respective sport. It elevates the game so much. Like Tiger doesn't even have to, if Tiger even just makes the cut, that much more people will watch throughout the weekend. Like he is just, I mean, yeah, I'll be like more fascinated if he makes the cut, right?
I know, like, I sound like a fair weather fan. I am.
I mean, too.
Absolutely. When Tiger Woods is able to put it on the fairway, I become that fair weather fan mm-hmm. of Tiger once again, just because it's better for the sport. And it doesn't mean he needs to win. But it does
making
mean
the cut is making
right.
The cut.
He needs to make it into that next portion of it. And if so, well, then the eyes, I'm sure, won't skyrocket to, you know, women's college basketball numbers,
no.
But it'll raise a little bit.
Yeah. As I'm sure our listeners can tell that we are fair weather fans, because this is the few times that we will talk about golf. And it's when it has to deal with a tournament like Augusta, or like the Masters at Augusta National Golf Course in Georgia, because it is just one of those historic things. You got the green jacket that is just so synonymous with the sport as a whole. So it's one of the few tournaments that I turn into like every single day, along with the Sony Open, just because it's here. But looking forward to it. I do have to say, considering that golf is such a... Is pretentious the right word?
Yes.
Okay.
Golf and tennis kind of fall into the same category for me.
Because it's one of those type of sports where usually, because it's so expensive to just even participate.
It's a privileged sport.
Yeah.
It just is.
You know, going to the golf course costs money. It's not something you can just go like to a park and play, like how, or anywhere, open fields or open, wherever. It's one of those you got to spend money on the equipment and you got to pay to get lessons and go to the course. I must say that for a sport that is for the privileged more times than not, when it comes to the Masters, and I think that's why I enjoy it so much, is because they still are very, let's see, how do I explain this? Aside from the ticket sales, because getting in is very, very expensive, you can only get in with passes. I must say that when you get in, their like snacks and beverages, they're like the Costco hot dog. Like, they have not raised their prices in Augusta National for the Masters. You can get every single item on their concession menu for $66. Like, that's way cheaper than going to any other professional sport. They're best known for the egg salad sandwich, which I love egg salad sandwiches, $1.50. And so is their pimento cheese sandwich, also $1.50. They have pork barbecue sandwich and Masters Club classic chicken sandwich, all for only $3. When you look at the breakfast menu, they have coffee for just a couple of bucks, a muffin for $1.50. Shoot, you go to a Starbucks and get a muffin, it's like $6 or more. It was a pretty big muffin, but still, mixed fruit for only $2. I know Hawaii people are like tripping out even more so because our prices are absurd here in Hawaii. But beverages, you can get a domestic beer for only $5. There is no other sporting event, and trust me, because I've been to a lot, both college and professional, where you can get a beer for $5 or less. And the domestic beer price and import beer price are the same. The most expensive thing on the menu, a glass of white wine. And they only have white wine. Just $6. It's crazy looking at this. Again, it's Costco hot dog status, where peanuts, cookies, to ice cream sandwiches, just $1.50. So everything on the menu at Augusta National, if you get one thing each, you would only spend $66. So
feels nice. I don't know anywhere else that
now
happens.
You'll spend like $3,000 to get in. So, but I mean, at least you're not breaking the bank on feeding yourself and giving yourself sustenance.
So I'm going to be real. I always understand spending money to get into places.
Yeah.
It's once I get in, it's like, dang, man. Like, I already paid, wow, a premium to get in here. Because I think that for any
especially if it's
event.
Like a bottle of water.
Oh, my
that's
God.
That's the worst.
When you're paying $7 for a bottle of water, it's a big reason why you see these people outside stadiums and whatnot selling
I
water.
I bought from those people.
I do it all the time. Oh, my gosh. If anybody is a longtime listener of this show, you know I've been to all 30 MLB parks. And guess what? Every single time we find a way to go in with our own water, you don't break the seal of the cap, and that way you can bring it in or whatever. It's like, you have to do stuff like that, because otherwise you're going to spend exorbitant sums of money already after paying hundreds to thousands of dollars to go see a sporting event. So I, for one, love hearing. If you're going to spend premium to go watch something, go get into something, whatever, at least I can eat for a manageable price and so can my family.
I'm sure the people that can't afford to get into the Masters are aren't starving. But nonetheless, I agree with you that at least it's not breaking the bank once you get in, because yeah, the water prices are the one that gets me the most. Like, you should keep that. You should keep that fair, because that's a actual necessity. Yeah, they have water fountains, but man, bring down the, and then everything else, maybe like small food, then keep it affordable. But anyways, that's enough on that. So
we
it is Manawahine Wednesday. So when we come back, you will hear my chat with University of Hawaii water polo utility player Lott Sturtefield next on Wake Up in the Den.
Back to more Wake Up in the Den with Ku'ule Agbayani on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760.
Thank you guys for tuning in this and every weekday morning. It's Wake Up in the Den, Ku'ule Agbayani and Paul Brex, Manawahine Wednesday. The University of Hawaii women's water polo team wraps up the regular season this weekend, but they have already clinched at least a share of the Big West regular season title and also the number one seed heading into the Big West Water Polo Championships. One of the four seniors that will be honored this weekend, I had a chance to chat with to just, you know, get to know her a little bit. So here is my conversation with utility player Lott Sturtefield. All right, joining me now, another treat for everybody from the awesome program that is the University of Hawaii Women's Water Polo Team. Joining me is utility player Lott Sturtefield. Lott, thank you so much for taking the time to join us during this busy final week of the regular season.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me over.
All right, so first things first, I usually get asked people to tell us a little bit about their hometown. You're originally from the Netherlands, but I don't even want to attempt to pronounce what is listed as your hometown. So please tell us where you're from.
So I'm from Nijverdal. It's like a small town in the east of the Netherlands. I like to say it's close to Germany. Then people get like an idea of where it is. But it's like far away from Amsterdam. That's the only place people know. So. Yeah, a small city.
Maybe just share with us one or two things that make that city in particular very special that we definitely here in Hawaii and America have no idea about.
Let's think. Well, my original water polo club is from there. We're the only Division I team in the East that has the men's and women's team in the first league. So I've been playing there my whole life. Secondly, it got nominated as happiest place for multiple years in the Netherlands, so, or like the place with the happiest people.
That's pretty cool. That's a nice little fun fact. I like that one. And I'm assuming you look like a very happy person, so I'm assuming that's the truth.
Yeah, I love it there.
Nice for us to know. Say it again one more time, just so some of our listeners can somewhat grasp what the city is called.
Nijverdal.
Got it. All right. Put that on your vocabulary, everybody. Nijverdal, Netherlands, is where Lott Sturtefield is from, the utility player for the UH women's water polo team. All right. Take us back a little bit, though. How, how did you first get into playing water polo, and what solidified your love for it, where you're thinking, oh, I want to continue this for as long as I can?
So my dad was a water polo player. He was also a ref. And my parents think it's super important for us to play a team sport for me and my brothers. So we tried soccer first. That wasn't it. So then my dad was like, let me take them to the pool. And we signed up. And me and my two brothers, we played water polo there for a couple of years. And then I just loved it so much. I stayed and played. Yeah, my whole life there.
And you have your two brothers, it says here, they're older than you. So
yes.
What was that like? And how much older are they? And what was it like being the youngest sibling and being the only girl in the family?
So they're 2 and 3 years older. I think it's always like the little sister, a little bit bullying. But I mean, we have a good bond. And it's always fun. At vacations, we would play in the lakes, water polo. My dad and my two brothers against me. Like we would do like funny games, but yeah, like they're like role models in water polo. My brother still plays. My dad and my other brother stopped, so it's fun. Our whole dinners are about water polo, and my dad is a ref, so he would like give me tips and or tell me what not to do or what he saw that was wrong. And it's always fun on a dining table after a game.
And where does your brother play now, the one who still currently plays?
He plays for Hetrovijn in Nijverdal. It's like the club where I grew up to, Robin.
Awesome. And we are joined by Lotte Sturtevelt from the UH Women's Water Polo Program. All right, from Netherlands and now here to Hawaii. What made you choose the University of Hawaii to continue your collegiate career?
So Coach Maureen Cole reached out to me after playing, I think it was Youth World Championship in Portugal. She sent me a message asking if I was interested in coming here. I haven't really thought about like moving to America and like playing here, but at home it's really hard to combine sports and education. It's not like the American system. So I was actually really intrigued by like combining it. And she showed me some pictures of the island and I was like, sold. Like, that's amazing. Outdoors, all the pools at home are indoors. It's always like gloomy weather. It's cold, it's rainy. Here it's sunny all the time. So it was an easy choice.
Yeah. And do you know, obviously your sport takes place in the pool. Do you find yourself venturing off to all the beaches here as well?
Well, our schedule is really busy. We usually only have Sundays off, so I try to go to the beach every Sunday. But yeah, not as much as I would hope to go to the beach. But
and speaking of being very busy, I mentioned it before we started chatting here that I see you working for Sodexo at some of the games here during the water polo season. So tell us a little bit about how you personally balance, you know, school, obviously, because we're a student athlete first. So school, water polo, and having to work as well.
Well, as an international student, we can only work on campus. And I worked for Sodexo, and my boss, Patrick, super nice. Like, he's super flexible. Like, if you want to earn some money, we text him and he puts us on the games. And it's like a fun working place. Like a lot of international students, a lot of athletes, and I just work after practice if needed.
Yeah, and hopefully you don't get too bothered by some of us crazy fans that pop into the Ed Wong room.
I mean, it's always super fun. I met a lot of people, and a lot of people actually, after we talked with them, they reached out to Coach Mo and like helped us with some pre-game meals, post-game meals. So it's always fun to meet people and they help us out.
Awesome. And we are joined by Lotte Sturtevelt, of the UH Women's Water Polo Program. Now, speaking of the program itself, this past weekend, you guys clinched a share, at least, of the Big West regular season championship with the 13-6 victory over Long Beach State. Also, this is the sixth Big West regular season title and third in the last 4 years. So just describe what it's like to be part of such a successful program. I know it's something your dad must be thrilled about, being that he is a water polo coach and ref, or your family in general. But describe how you feel to be such a part of such a winning program. And also, what do you feel makes you guys so successful?
Obviously, it's super special. I'm really thankful to being part of this team for 4 years. We had pretty good results the last few years. What makes us special? I think our team obviously exists of so many international players, and we all have our own unique features and like ideas about water polo. I mean, every country we play differently. And by bringing that all together, I feel like our style is pretty unique. I think it's a little bit different from the American style, which I think works in our favor. We all have our like the Spanish attack, and then like the Dutch are like more defense. Mm. So we have like a combine of all like different features. And I think that works really well.
That's awesome. And I, you're listed as a utility, and who we had on a couple of weeks ago, your teammate Jordan Wedderburn is also a utility player. She kind of talked to us a little bit about what a utility player does. So same question for you. Just talk about your position a little bit and how maybe you found yourself playing that position.
So this year is actually the first year I've been playing on the 1-2 side. I'm originally like a 4-5 player. It's the left-hander side, but I'm a righty. But a utility is more a person who can play multiple positions. So I can play both sides. 1 year I played as a defender too. I'm just not a center like Jordan or Bia, obviously. But yeah, I can play both sides. And it's more like you can defend, attack, kind of everything, I feel like.
Maybe that's a little bit about what makes you guys so good, too. It seems like multiple players on your team play multiple positions.
I feel like everyone can play everywhere. We can rotate, like, different lines get in, and it's just makes it, let's see, like, interesting to play. Like, some days it would play on the 4-5 side with, for example, Lucia or Bernie, and then we have Jordan playing on the 1-2 side, or I play on the 1-2 side with Aggie and Jordan is center. And I feel like since when we rotate, it just works well. Everyone on different spots. Everyone can fill in for each other.
Awesome. And I hope everyone comes out this week to cheer on the Rainbow Wahine Water Polo Program senior night this Saturday. And speaking of senior night as well, you are one of the seniors that will be honored following that game. So maybe just share with us a couple of your favorite memories that you've had with your time here at the University of Hawaii, both personally and as a player.
There are so many great memories, first of all. I think some of my great memories are obviously winning Big West my freshman year. That was great. It was a weird time with COVID and we still managed to win. That was a great year. I think last year winning Cal at home for the first time in a long time, we beat the MPSF team and that was a big thing. Some personal memories. I feel like I just grow a lot here as a person. Like not only like as a player, but like personal, it's the first time I live on myself, speaking different languages, meeting so many great people, getting to play under Coach Mo and Coach James. I think it's just the experience overall. It's just great.
And we hope that your guys' season does carry out quite a few more weeks after this, you know, with albeit that hopefully winning the Big West Championship and then moving on even further to continue your collegiate career. But once that does officially come to an end, your major is listed as psychology. You are quite the student athlete. Last year earned all Big West academic honors, named to Big West Commissioner's Honor Roll. So just tell us a little bit about your major, why you chose it, and maybe some future career plans that you might have.
So I actually double majoring in sociology and psychology. And I already have my plans for next year. I'm going to do a master's in London for sports psychology because I just like to stay in the field of sports, athletics, like student athletes. And I'm just want to work on like with college students and like,
That sounds awesome in London. So we're just going country hopping. I love it. No, that's awesome. That's what you need to do as a young person. Where exactly in London or what school?
So I'm currently still applying to the University of East London, sports psychology. It's a relatively new school, all about like athletes. Unfortunately, they don't have a water polo team. So I will be stopping water polo. But I'm just really excited to start a new part of my life, focus more on school because it has always been like, oh, sports, but now it's going to be school. And yeah, I hope to get a master's and hopefully more after.
Yeah. Speaking of student athletes or just athletes and psychology, as we are joined by Lotte Sturtefeld of the women's water polo team for the University of Hawaii, talk to us about how you personally maybe dealt with everything that happened with the pandemic and being an athlete and different country and coming out of it, all of that kind of stuff that went on. So just in general, like when, you know, the pandemic happened and world shutting down and being from a different country and then coming out of it, I know it's hard. It was a hard time for a lot of student athletes and finding ways to deal with it and not being able to necessarily play their sport for a little while as well. So if you don't mind sharing with us everything that maybe you went through, maybe things that helped you still continue to succeed after that point in time for everybody.
Well, obviously we couldn't practice anymore. It was rough, like going from practicing like 20, 25 hours a week to zero has some effects on body. That was something I struggled with, being an athlete and always super in super good form and super fit, and then suddenly not practicing at all. It was a big change in my life. I had to adjust a lot. And then when I came here in my freshman year, the first semester, we still didn't practice. So we tried to keep ourselves busy with beach workouts, a lot of swim runs. We didn't really like those, but I mean, it's great that you're in Hawaii and you can use the water, more privileged than a lot of other people. And yeah, it was a big kind of adjustment to go back to being a student athlete, especially with like time management, not getting injured after such a long period of time of not playing water polo. But I always loved water polo and I miss it a lot. I love practicing, to be honest. So I was really happy when Mo gave us the text, like, hey guys, we're back in the pool, season is on, and everyone was super excited. And yeah.
Awesome. And maybe just a couple more for you here, Lotte. Just talk to us a little bit about, you know, the mentality of yourself and the team heading through the final stretch of the regular season. And then knowing that you guys already, you know, clinched at least a share of the regular season title and the number one seed in the championships in a couple of weeks. How do you guys, you know, stay focused and eyes on the prize and still want to go out there and, you know, come out with a couple of wins these next two games, even though you've already clinched those spots?
Well, first of all, it's my last season here in Hawaii, and I obviously want to end it the best way possible, which means going to the NCAA final and getting that championship. And like last year, we were also regular season champs, and unfortunately, we lost. Even though we won all the regular season games by quite a lot. So I think looking to this season, we know that happened last year and we all know that can happen again. So we all talk about like how we need to stay focused and like we all experienced how unfortunate that was. Like we all kind of expected that we would win and the other team came out way tougher than us. So we talk about that a lot and how we just need to stay focused these last few games. Even Santa Barbara senior night, need to just give it our all, take the one seed, which is really important. Because our route to the season, to the championship will just be way easier than if we have to face a Long Beach or an Irvine in the semifinals, which are amazing teams and always play super hard. And especially in those championship games, they just give it their all. So yeah, it's just really important to finish strong these last games and keep giving everything during practice, stay focused, be consistent. I think that's like the few keywords is being consistent. Mm-hmm. With our energy, with our toughness, how Mo likes to say it. You just need to be tough and keep going. And it's my last semester. I just want to give it all and be the best.
I love it. And we are definitely going to be rooting for you guys. Last thing, maybe anything you want to, any words that you want to share for all of the fans listening?
Just I'm super grateful to have spent my years in Hawaii and to play for such an amazing state. I mean, we're the only university on island representing Hawaii as a college in water polo. Felt super special. We always got support from the community and the high school kids who come to our games, and it just feel like we're so supported and loved, and that's just a really special feeling. I'm really thankful for that, and I'm sad to leave, but excited to look forward in my life.
Awesome. Last or final words. And we are very appreciative of you for giving your all for the University of Hawaii and ultimately the state. So thank you so much for not only taking the time to join us on this interview today, but also just everything you've given to the state.
Thank you.
And that was my chat with UH women's water polo player, utility player, Lott Sturtefeld, one of the seniors that will be honored this weekend following Saturday's match between UC Santa Barbara. That is at 6 p.m. at the Duke Honomoku Aquatic Complex. So hope you guys come out. If not, you can actually watch it on Spectrum Sports as well. We'll be right back on Wake Up in the Den.
Stop playing with them, Riot.
Wake Up in the Den with Kuhule Agbayani on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760.
All of the Barbies is pretty. All of the Barbies is bad. It girls, and we ain't playing tag.
Welcome back to all of you, the beautifulest of all the beautiful people. It's Wake Up in the Den alongside Paul Bracktime, Kuhule Agbayani. Thanks again to Lott Sturtefeld for, you know, joining me to chat a little bit. Conversation ran a lot longer than I thought it would, but it was a fun chat. Either way, you can see Paul's feature story that will be out on HawaiiSportsRadio.com later today. Man, talk about winning program, like such as, you know, we'll get to women's basketball in just a little bit. Some news that came out, but just thinking about how successful the water polo program has been here in Hawaii. I mean... And they're just going to keep on going with, even though, you know, Coach Mo is retiring or stepping away this season, but just having the new coach and James Robinson step right in, all the players seem to love him as well, have the same mentality. And we'll be having a very successful water polo program that we can see, only losing a few seniors this year, including Lott herself. But you hear not only Lott brought her up, but also Jordan when we interviewed her, one of their best players in Bia, like she's still around. So we're going to have a very, very competitive water polo program for the foreseeable future. So we hope you guys can come out this Saturday for the final match of the regular season against UC Santa Barbara, 6 o'clock p.m. at the Duke Kahanamoku Aquatic Complex. And there's nothing else going on campus. All the other teams, softball, baseball, men's volleyball, like everyone's away. So hope you guys will come out and support women's water polo. Okay, so this is pretty interesting. No surprise there, but it came out yesterday morning that this is what we were kind of speculating, and we were going to say that for the first time in history, the NCAA women's basketball title game drew more viewers than the men's. So the women's averaged 18.9 million viewers, where the men averaged, I got tongue-tied there, just looking at the stats, I'm like, I can't believe it's happening.
It's mind-boggling.
14.8 million. And we said it, but just to see the facts come out is not surprising because we already had a feeling it would happen, but just to actually see the hard numbers and considering that it outdrew not only the viewership, but we saw the ticket prices. Granted, the women play in a place with a lot fewer tickets to be issued, but the ticket prices went higher. Everything went higher for the women's game. And, you know, no surprise to people like Paul and I, because we've been saying it like
all year, forever.
That women's basketball, man, it's, and definitely not taking away anything from Caitlin Clark, though. She is a huge reason why the eyeballs went there and the fans of Iowa. So I think the fact that she had such a supportive fan base in Iowa and there was really nothing else to compete with in Iowa, you know, their football program was kind of, they were good, but only because their defense was good and they didn't put up a lot of points and they were kind of eh. So, and it was just all about Caitlin Clark in Iowa, and their fans showed out, had like that basketball game in their football stadium with all the fans that came out to that. So
yeah.
I think a lot of credit has to be given just to the supporters of that school in general for coming out and supporting Caitlin and the women's basketball program. But not only that, but there were still lots of good storylines with Angel Reese and South Carolina, the team that didn't really have like a player that was talked about, one specific player that was talked about for the entire season, but just the way that they finished, considering they lost all five starters from last season and what Dawn Staley has been able to do. There's just all of these fascinating stories throughout women's basketball. And it's what Paul and I have been saying, where it's just a pure form of the sport. And we saw men take a dip because you didn't have like your Zion Williamson. You didn't have your player that you're like, oh, that's an NBA guy. Oh, I can't believe like this. He's totally going to make a difference in the NBA. We didn't have that this year. And that's kind of what the men's side has somewhat always hung its coat on, is that you're watching these future NBA players, and the talent level this year just wasn't what we've been used to. So it was almost like a perfect storm of the women have all of this great basketball and these phenomenal players, and the men were just meh.
I think the key word that you touched on there is future, because fans a lot of times like to see the future of the sport. They like to see the sport changing as it's being played. Think back to when Steph Curry was lighting the world on fire in the mid-2010s, back 2015, 16, 16, 17, so on and so forth. And that's kind of the Caitlin Clark effect over on women's mm-hmm. basketball, where you see the future of the sport, and it's much more apparent over on the women's college basketball side, because you're right, it's not just Caitlin. It's South Carolina losing five starters and then replacing them all to go 38-0 and win a national title, the first one since, 2016. Guess what? There's a pretty good correlation right there alongside with it. You go and you see Juju Watkins, you see Paige Beckers, you understand that UConn lost a lot of their starters, pulled a Rainbow Wahine and lost five players to season-ending injuries, and still ended up making it pretty darn far into March Madness. It was incredibly exciting. You have Azzie Fudd coming back next year for UConn alongside Paige Beckers, not to mention they just added the number one recruit in the class of 2024 as well in Sarah Strong. And on top of that, UConn's probably not even going to be your favorite next year. How can they be? You look at South Carolina returning a ton, and South Carolina returning a ton once again, coming off the bench and stepping into starter roles. This is not even mentioning the Iowa State girl who took over the entire tournament in the first round this past year.
Oh, yeah.
On top of that, you always I know the Pac-12 is no longer the Pac-12, but you have the shifting of all of them going to new leagues. How will that play? There are so many incredible storylines with incredible players staying at the college level while you still get the star power of Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and so on and so forth. Camila Cardoso going to the WNBA draft in less than a week's time.
And then you have a couple of players, including one of like my favorite from Oregon State. They've entered the transfer portal, so you don't know where they will end up potentially. Haley Van Lith entered the transfer portal after going to LSU from Louisville, so we don't know where she's going to end up. And then you have the retirement announcement by Stanford head coach Tara Vanderveer after 38 seasons is retiring. So that's a huge job that is open in the college basketball world. I was talking to my other half yesterday, and he is throwing the head coach of UNLV's women's basketball program as the potential front runner for that Stanford job, because at UNLV, they've gone back to back to back Mountain West Conference champions, and she was a point guard for Stanford and also coached under Tara Vanderveer for a little bit before taking the job at UNLV. So that would be interesting to throw a coach who's had this success at the mid-major level to fill into the Stanford role, because clearly she's been able to succeed with a place that has way less resources than you would have at Stanford. In what conference are they in now?
The ACC.
ACC. Okay, I'm like,
the Atlantic Coast Conference. Yeah, that's what I think of when I think of California-based teams, the Atlantic Coast.
So weird. But then so again, maybe dumb. she maybe she won't want to take that job. Because when you think about it, and I think that's a reason, that could be a reason why Vanderveer maybe retired, because you look at the schedule and it's just daunting having to go through that after a while. I mean, 38 seasons, she's a successful coach, you know, like, I don't blame her for just wanting to say goodbye at this point, because we've seen a lot of these veteran coaches say goodbye. Well, Roy Williams, from what I heard when they were at Coaches Versus Cancer, even is like, man, I don't know how everyone's navigating this NIL world. And he's a successful men's basketball coach. And for him to say that, even Jay Wright joked, like, he's, when the Kentucky job opened up, he joked that he's very fine with
where he is.
He's like, I'm great.
Well, one, Jay Wright, if he's going to coach again, it will be as the New York Knicks head coach once Tom Thibodeau retires. Sorry. Anyway, it's incredible to think about the coaching legends that we've, I don't want to say lost, that makes them sound like they died,
yeah,
but the coaching legends that have stepped away from their respective games just for this current group of college kids. Let's say you were a freshman 4 years ago in college. You started with, I mean, Belichick and Sean Payton still at their places, Pete Carroll in the NFL, and then all the way through college you have Nick Saban, who was still there, Coach K,
so
still
crazy,
there, Roy Williams at UNC, Jim Boeheim at Syracuse, Cal was still at Kentucky, Jay Wright was still at Nova, Tara Vanderveer still at Stanford, and now all of them, just 3.5 years later, are all gone, stepping away from the game and happily retired, it seems like, away from this NIL and transfer portal world.
It's so crazy to think about. You're right. It's not that long ago when all these players were still in there, but it's a wild, wild west. So the other breaking basketball news this morning, though, is it somewhat deals locally. A former Marino player, Sage Tolentino, has entered the transfer portal, playing out at Cincinnati. What is he listed at? 7'1"?
He is 7'1", I believe 240 pounds. He's a big boy as a redshirt freshman.
Which he put on a lot of weight, because when the last time we saw him here at Marino, definitely could have added some. He got recruited, I believe, at that time. You know, Kansas was actually one that called him. Auburn, I remember. And then he's been at Cincinnati for the past couple of seasons. But entering his name in the transfer portal, and everyone is saying for Hawaii that everyone wants to see the big man.
At the very least, Hawaii, I think, should check in on him. I'm sure they did or will if they haven't quite yet. They still, after the commitment of Tanner Christensen, have another role at the center spot to fill after Morsek transfer, or intention to transfer, obviously, currently in the portal, hearing from a few teams. But it would be a nice little grab. I know a lot of Hawaii fans love when you have local boys on the team. You think back just a season ago before this one, when you have Kamaka Hepa and Samusa Avea. If you do something like that, he's a redshirt freshman, so some time to continue developing as well. Not expected to come in and start from day one with Christensen here, but with an opportunity to step in potentially to a starting role next year, you could sell that to him. And you're right, coming out of high school, had some pretty interesting offers and some pretty big blue blood schools interested in him. We've talked about Kentucky ad nauseum. They had interest, never ended up offering him. The Jayhawks of Kansas did offer him along with Auburn. He originally committed to the Auburn War Eagles, and then Tigers, I guess, but War Eagle. Sorry, shout out Charles Barkley. And he ends up committing to Auburn, decommits, and then goes to Cincinnati instead. He ended up going to an Ohio high school after transferring away from Marinol, in case people forgot, and was a top 150 recruit in the class of 2022. It would be a good high upside grab, and you've heard me say it all the time, you can't teach 7'1". You can't teach that type of size. You can teach basketball skills, but you can't teach that size. So it would be interesting. Curious if Hawaii checks in and how heavy they check in. A lot of different names that they're in the mix for right now. Would have to expect some movement in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and as a freshman, he appeared in the Bryant and Miami, Ohio contest, totaling 8 minutes. scored 4 points with two boards in the December 4th debut and added a free throw against the Red Hawks and earned a medical redshirt. And then as a redshirt freshman this past season, appeared in 6 games, which included a career-high 5 minutes against Detroit Mercy and had a block in the regular season finale against West Virginia. So not a ton of production in the first, you know, his freshman slash redshirt freshman years, but chances are he's still very much developing. If anyone remembers watching him at Marino, you could tell that, yes, he had the size, which you can't teach, you're right, but there was still a lot of basketball skill that he needed to learn.
And that's where you look at a Rob Jones here at Hawaii and you feel good about the assistant coaches and their ability to communicate, especially with a local guy, somebody that potentially they'd been able to see before. So interesting to see how his recruitment goes from here. A lot of run left on those tires, so may as well knock on the door.
Yeah, you know, everyone wants to see the local kid come back home. It's been a while. All right, but for that, we got to go. So for Paul Brecht, I'm Ku'ule Agbayani. Mahalo for listening. It's been Wake Up in the Den. Bye!